Welcome to the Boxing Talk Show, Fed but Firm, with the Hall of Fame boxing referee. I'm Joe Cortez and co-host John Zimmel for all of Las Vegas. Come on, guys, let's touch them up. Team fight. I'm Joe Cortez, Fed but Firm.
Well, welcome to the Fed but Firm show here in Las Vegas, Nevada, the entertainment capital of the world, and of course, the boxing capital of the world. Well, today we have a special guest who's one of the top good-looking guys, big-hearted boxing, just for Teofimo Lopez last week. And didn't get the win, but you know what? Look at him. So good-looking, sharp, ready to go. I always say there's boxing after boxing. This man is ready to take it on. My co-host is John Zimmel, and we're going to talk a little bit about your fight last week, Diego. Tell me a little bit about that fight.
Very, very controversial fight. It was a great fight. Leading up to the fight, it was great. It was emotional on both sides. Both teams were, you know, throwing, you know, little jabs at each other. But at the end of the day, you know, it's boxing. And people and the fans have to know what boxing is.
Yeah.
Boxing isn't pretty. It's a brutal sport.
But how about pretty face like yours into boxing? It isn't pretty, but it's pretty for him.
You have to stay, you know, conscious of what's going on. I know that boxing is dangerous. You go in there, you don't think of what can happen too much. You know what I mean? Because you don't want to get distracted.
Of course.
But you go in there, you have fun. Yeah, and I enjoy it. That's the important part. I enjoy boxing.
Yeah, I know you do. And it, you know, people say he got blue eyes. Sometimes you get black eyes. You know?
that's the game.
But that's the game. Yeah, that's the game. But you know what? Yeah. You also have a brother who was a world champion in the featherweight division, right?
Tell
us a little bit about your younger
Jesse
brother.
Jesse Magdaleno. You guys have seen him, many times in the ring, and he is a pleasure to see in the ring because he's an animal. That's what people love about him. Yeah. He goes in there, and he gets down to work. He puts guys out, and that's what he's family, fan-friendly.
Absolutely.
Fan-friendly. I think the Magdaleno brothers, for sure, are fan-friendly in one way or another.
Yeah.
We put on a show for people.
Well, that's good to see. Hey, going back to your last fight, because I don't want to skip over that.
Yeah.
This last fight against Teofimo, there was a lot of, you mentioned controversial. We can go down the list. Obviously, there was a lot of talk in the beginning. Then there was, there was talk about a stoppage. There was a lot, you know, the referee got some flack. Your corner got some flack. Did you feel like the fight should have been stopped sooner?
Well, what was going on with the average person wasn't seeing is what was going on in the corner. After every round, I was coming back to the corner and I was talking to my coaches and my team, letting them know where I was. That's why they were allowing me to go back out there and fight.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I wanted to ask you, being a great referee, the referees, they're trained a certain way. They to notify the corner or the fighter whether they can continue. What are things that, you know, and this is for the viewer, that shows what, you know, how to, when to call it. Because that's one of the things. They were blaming the corner and the referee.
Well, let me tell you one thing. As a referee, I would have been a referee in that corner, in that fight that night. I would have come over to the corner. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, first of all, in the dress room. That's why I take control back in the dress room. I'll tell you back in the dress room. Listen, I'm here to protect you. First and foremost, the safety of the fighter.
Mm-hmm.
Second is to enforce the rules. However, your corner man, you know your fighter better than I do. If you feel it should be stopped, stop it. Because if you don't, I'll stop it.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps the doctor will stop it.
Right.
But then I will go to the corner. If I see you taking a little too much, I say, there, buddy, I'm going to give you an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
But if I see you taking too much, I'm going to stop this fight. So show me something next round.
Right. Did that happen?
Okay? You know?
The
referee came over.
The commission came. The referee came by.
Okay.
And what people don't know is also my brother, my blood brother, was in the corner, working my corner for the first time. And to have someone that close to you not call it either, you know what I mean? Because he has emotional ties.
Of course, you know? He would call it way before you.
And sometimes that's not good.
At the same time, he's a fighter.
So
he understands both sides.
I know, he understands that. But honestly, me as a referee, I'm looking at you like, if you were like my son, somebody beat your butt, I'm going to say, no, that's it. Stop it. I don't want you to take any more.
Yeah. So there's two different sides of this fight, right? There's the side that the people want to see the fighters go in there and fight. And then the other side that, you know, they're like the safety of the fighter. All the, they want to blame the corner. They want to blame, you know, the referee that this and that should have happened. I've been getting so much from the fans alone. Like, hey, you are a trooper. You are an inspiration.
You were a warrior.
You are a warrior.
Yeah, you absolutely were. No one's saying you yet.
You are a warrior in there. But then again, let me bring up something. A very, very dear close friend of mine is Victor Ortiz, right? He gets in the ring with Josito Lopez, which I was ringside for that fight. He gets in the ring, and I knew after the fourth round there was something wrong.
Yeah.
But he continued.
Of course.
He continued to fight. I think it was in the later rounds where he calls it himself, not his corner. He calls it, and he calls it, hey, I am done. My jaw is broken. Something's wrong. And
that's
it was
right.
Clearly broken right here.
I've seen that shot over and over again.
I rode to the hospital in the ambulance with him night to the hospital. And for the rest of his career, they've called him a quitter.
No.
They threw popcorn at him. I was there walking him out, beer at us. And they treat him, even at Staples Center when he fought Andre Berto, they threw a pizza, a box with pizza in it at him after the fight. I was nailed on the shoulder with it on the way out. So I'm like,
yeah, that's not good.
So
it's
a fine line of where you should call it. Right?
Yeah, well, let me tell you one thing. As a referee, I can tell you one thing. Fighters, and I was a fighter myself.
Oh, yeah.
We have heart. We don't want to quit. I mean, it's hard for us to quit. Because in our heart, we see a fighter. When we watch fights in person or on TV, we watch, come on, we don't want the guy to quit. You know, but in your heart, you know you're not a quitter. Sometimes, like you said, Victor had a cracked jaw.
He had a broken jaw.
Yeah.
We've seen it, man. I mean, that was a flush shot.
But you fans out there, you're the ones that when a fighter ends up in a hospital, ends up in a coma, ends up like
Adonis Stevenson, Bobby Jack, like, any of these other situations.
Some fighters end up either dead or like vegetables. I mean, you don't want to see that in boxing. You want to see a great fight, but you get involved emotionally. But then in the real world, wait a minute. He's a human being just like us.
Oh, my God.
They have a body. We got to
with their life on the line.
And they got a family. They got children. They got, they're married. They got family members at home. You don't want to come home safe. So it's the job of a referee and a good corner and a good ringside doctor to stop it. One punch too soon, then a punch too late.
Absolutely.
We don't want any more tragedies in boxing. And I hope your fans understand that.
And the last thing I want to ask about, because this is this got more attention than the fight itself, unfortunately, was Teofimo's antics after the fight.
Right, right.
He did his backflip. He does that. He's famous for it. And then he came over and made a little gesture towards you.
Right.
I don't know if it was a shovel or if he was sweeping you. I don't know what it was. What was your take on that when you saw it afterwards or heard about it?
See, my take on that is sportsmen, okay? We have to be sportsmen, whether we are emotional or, you know, about the fight or getting hyped.
Good sportsmen like.
Good sportsmen. Boxing is a gentleman's sport.
Absolutely.
I would love to keep it that way. If I would have ended up in the hospital that night.
How bad would that have looked, of course?
Yeah, it would have been a different talk, too, about
people's
actions afterwards. What I got in a report of Max Kellerman and the interview he was doing or a video that he shot with Teofimo saying that he did that because of a backlash on his Honduras background, which was not true.
Okay.
There was an interview on YouTube where I did with Ernesto Amador, and that came from him. And I completely dodged the question. If you watch the interview, it's there, and I said nothing about it. But he stated on his caption that it came from the camp, from the Magdaleno camp, which was never true.
You think that's just him trying to find motivation anywhere he can, or
it might be.
You think he's making an excuse?
But at the same time, I think the fighters should get the real story before they spout out at the mouth.
Right. You know, I like to see a fighter like Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson used to say some things about his fighter that he used to knock him out. And as soon as he knocked him out, he was the first one there to help him and to, you know, hold him up. And he was so kind.
We love seeing that, yeah.
He had a big heart when it came. You know, he knocked out a fighter, okay. And at the end, they embraced each other. They were like brothers. And, that's the way it is, you know. That's the way it should be. But anyway, I'm looking at your career down the line. Of course, my thing is safety of the fighters. And I want to protect this man. Like I said from day one, I love this guy. Good man, him and his brother and his dad. And I say, you got what it takes to be a good commentator.
Yeah.
I mean, you got the knowledge.
Yeah.
You got the wisdom. You've been in the ring. Yeah. You got the looks and you got the smarts.
Yeah.
You're always a good guest on here.
You know, right. You know your game is that we'll be talking about other things that are doing the show here today about upcoming fights. Now, I wanted you to have your little input about fights that are coming up.
That's a good point. Actually, yeah, let's start with that. Because let's recap last week. This last week we saw Gervonta Davis, who was supposed to fight Abner Morris, didn't get a chance to because obviously Abner Morris career-threatening, right. Detached retina, which is the second one, very scary situation. So Hugo Ruiz took on 10-day notice, took on an additional weight class, which had already been a second weight class from where he just was two fights ago. He's fought three weeks ago on 10 days notice, and obviously, got put down within one round. What was your take on that fight, and what did you like what you saw at Gervonta Davis? Did we learn anything because he fought a guy so below his class and below his weight class? Or?
Well, we all know that happened. Fighters fall out and they have to replace them with somebody right away, which can be dangerous sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Because you get ready for a specific opponent and then they put somebody else
happens
in there.
Happens a lot.
And game changer.
Jamal Charlo's last fight.
Yeah, it could be a lefty. It could be, they've done it to me and you have to be ready for everything. So something like that for Gervonta to get in there is it kind of can play with the
head a little
credit
bit. To him. And he was a lot taller than the guy he was training
for. So it changes everything. So you have to go in there and be able to adapt.
Absolutely.
Diego, in boxing, now you see boxing up from the outside looking in, you're a commentator calling the fights. You see these fighters taking sometimes a little too much punishment. I mean, you're the right guy that could talk to Diego. You've been there. What's going on in the fighter's head right now or his corner? What do you think they're talking about right now? And this is where you're going to come in as an expert. Like, you know it all.
You are, yes.
You've been in boxing, what, 20 years of your life?
Oh, 20-plus years.
Yeah, since
I was 8 years old.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
So the man knows his boxing. This is what I want to see. I like to see guys talking about boxing and know exactly what they're talking about because he's been in there. He knows what it feels to get hit with a body shot.
Oh, yeah.
You know what it feels like. He knows what it feels to get buzzed. You know, when you get buzzed and you really actually feel like, going around and say, you try to shake it off because you've been there.
Yeah.
But these guys, some of these guys don't know what, they're behind the mic. They do a great job. But I'd rather see somebody like you, a Roy Jones Jr.,
yes.
A Bernard Hopkins.
Andre Ward.
Andre Ward.
A lot of these former.
They're talking. They're great. You listen to George Foreman. You listen to these guys talking. You know they know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
And that's what I see a career in you in the future with the media because you have what it takes.
Well, I love the camera. I love the action. I love being in front of the camera. And I think definitely being anything that pertains to boxing because I'm a boxing fan too. Yeah. You know what I mean? If it wasn't for boxing, I wouldn't be where I'm at. I love boxing. It's in my nature. It's in my character. Mm-hmm. I've learned a lot from boxing. Boxing can also teach you who you are. It can teach you on the inside of where you need to dig deep. And it's a passion. It's a love. Yeah. I love this sport.
You know, I called you right after your last fight and because I care for you and I want to make sure you're okay. You were, thank God. And I said to myself, man, this guy, I see him on TV. I know all the aura that you have inside of you.
Right.
You're a tiger. You're a warrior. But I know that behind the mic, you're going to do a lot of good things. Talking about a lot of good things, I remember about 29 years ago today,
yes, sir.
February 11th,
very special
Mike Tyson got knocked out by Buster Douglas in Tokyo.
Yes.
Biggest upset in history.
That's an upset right there.
I mean,
it's something that will carry with Mike Tyson forever.
Well, you know, Mike Tyson was a 40-1 favorite.
40-1.
And this guy, Buster Douglas was a Holly nobody. Come on, here's another one round.
That goes
knockout.
To show you what boxing is. Boxing, everyone has a chance.
And you better come ready.
Everyone
no matter whether
has
you're
a
Mike
chance.
Tyson or whoever you are.
I think when you're on the top, that's when you got to try to be the strongest because when you're on the top, you're by yourself up there. So many down here, they want to knock you off the top so they can get up there. So, I mean, Mike Tyson learned his lesson that night.
Do you have any things you remember from that fight, Joe? Because you bring it up pretty often.
Yeah,
it's a good one.
What happened in that particular fight was when Mike Tyson had Buster Douglas down, this fight took place in Japan. He had Buster Douglas Long down, count. And they were the referees should have picked up the count for the timekeeper. The timekeeper was at five.
Yeah.
You can see with the freezer frame, he had a white glove on. The timekeeper was five, and the referee started at one. Two.
Yeah, so, Mike did knock him out.
So Mike, it would have been a knockout right then and there, but the referee picking up the count not picking it up from the timekeeper, he took it upon himself. Now, Buster Douglas beats the count. The round is over. Then he comes back, ends up knocking out Mike Tyson.
How does that happen?
People forget that a lot, man. And that's something that doesn't, you know what I mean? It gets overlooked.
And I'll tell you one thing. I got called in from the WBC and some attorneys. They wanted not for me to criticize the referee, but they want to know what is the duty of a referee. What is he supposed to do with a knockdown occurs? If a knockdown occurs, you send a fighter who scored a knockdown to the neutral corner, the first neutral corner, send him there. Then you pick up. You look at the timekeeper. You pick up the count from him.
That makes sense.
So if he's at five, the referee says six.
Yeah.
Yes.
Seven.
Not one.
I don't start at one. Now this guy's already.
The guy's already been down 5 seconds. Yeah.
Now he would have not gotten enough. I would have said 8, 9, 10. The guy was still down, see?
Right.
But no, it was the other way around. So by him picking it up at one, that referee never refereed another big champion.
Which, you know, that's what happens when you see stuff like that. I got a question about referees, and because I've been waiting to talk to you about this all week. This happened this last weekend in the Gervonta Davis fight. After the fight, our friend Jack Reese, who we had on the show right after his Tyson Fury Deontay Wilder fight, who we know knows when to stop a fight, he stopped the fight, and they interviewed him right after they interviewed Gervonta. Now, I've never seen where they interviewed a ref right afterwards and asked, what did you see? I like that from a fan standpoint. Mm-hmm. I think any point, any type of transparency on the ref or the judges, you know, parts is good as far as I'm concerned. Did you like that as a former referee, seeing Jack Reese interviewed?
Yes. You know, most commissioners don't let referees talk to the media, especially, you know, I mean, in that particular moment, it was a good thing. I mean, normally they don't call him because he did the right thing. No controversy.
Yes.
But when there's a controversy involved, that's what they want to bring the referee in to talk to him and say, you know, what actually happened here?
Clear it up.
You can clear it up. But Jack didn't have to clear nothing. He was just stating what he did.
It happened right away.
He spoke to Ruiz in Spanish, because Jack knows.
And Ruiz didn't respond.
He happens to be married to a Puerto Rican girl, you know?
Really?
So she teaches him a lot of Spanish.
Yeah.
So he said, Joe, I use that in the ring. So which is good.
And you did that, too. You were bilingual in the ring, and obviously you're bilingual outside of the ring.
But when I went to Japan, I had a little problem.
Did you? Yeah. That's why you stuttered it. Yeah, exactly. That's probably what happened in the Tyson Buster Douglas fight, is the translation issue. Yeah.
But it's so much fun. You know, we are talking about boxing, and that's one of the highlights in Tyson's career.
Absolutely.
One of the biggest upsets in boxing history.
It's probably the biggest, right?
Yeah. Well, one of them.
It's the one people name the most.
Right, yeah. Well, they also remember Mike Tyson.
Yes. How big he is.
I tell these guys, eat dinner before you go to the fight. I mean, he had to bite Holyfield's ear off.
Yeah, biting Holyfield's ear was pretty rough.
He said, Joe, it's only an appetizer. I didn't eat the whole bite.
No, that's why he had to go back for more. He was hungry.
Yes, I just took a piece of ear. So he went for the other ear to take a little dose.
He had a little bit.
And that's when he got disqualified by Mills Lane.
I got a question for both of you. Uh-huh. What's next for Gervonta Davis? Like, where does he go from here? Because we know that he's special. We keep hearing he's special. He's fast. He's strong. He's got good ring mechanics, excellent defense. But what's next? Who does he fight next? What do we see next? And is he ready for Vasily Lomachenko, who's the guy we keep hearing him being brought up against?
I believe that's a good potential fight for him. I believe that he does need a couple more fights.
Okay.
He's been off for so long.
Absolutely. You know what I mean? And he's only 24.
He has time to get back in there. He needs to get some of that ring rust off. And I think after one round, he's fought
four rounds in the last 18 months. Totally.
You're not going to get that much experience. And I think experience is the best.
Yeah, get those rounds in.
Yeah, get those rounds in and experience it.
How about you, Joe? What do you think next for him?
Well, I think that he has to take his time. He definitely needs more experience with quality fighters.
More active, yes, sir.
He can't be fighting no palookas out there.
I agree with you.
He got to be fighting good, decent fighters that can give him be competitive.
Would Abner Maris have been one of those tests that you're talking about?
Oh, yeah. Because Abner Maris has a world champion, two or three-time world champion.
Yeah, I mean, he's smaller, but agreed.
But he has a lot of talent. He has a lot of smarts. And I think just like...
He would have been tested like Diego was for Teofimo. Yeah,
exactly.
A step up in competition.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, a step up. So that's what Gervonta Davis needs. He needs some more experienced fighter. He needs to go more rounds. If I was his team, I would tell him, you know what? Okay, you heard the guy. You got the guy going, you know what? How about if we... You know, carry the guy a couple of more rounds. Get some ring rust out of him.
Yes.
Move around and learn a little bit more. We can stop him in the later round. But you know what? Let's get that work in. Plus, we get the boy exposed to with the fans. Get to see what kind of talent you really have.
Absolutely.
So it's a win-win if you stay a little longer. Yeah,
we've seen that before. We saw that with Tyson Fury's first fight back.
But what it is that you know you got that knockout power. You want to
get excited.
You know, you want to take the chance of you hit sometimes with a punch. Sometimes you hit a guy with a punch. You say, why? He goes down. Yeah. I don't think I hit him that hard.
Right.
Yeah, and they go down. Happens.
It's happened many times.
Hey, to be honest, what we were talking about before with Teofimo, with your last fight, I felt like Teofimo wanted to get more rounds in. I know he was talking about the first round knockout. Now, I'm not saying he was playing with you or anything like that. You definitely presented a much higher challenge than what he was used to. But I felt like he went into this with him and his team saying, let's not go for the first round knockout. Let's go for a little bit. Did you feel that way, or do you think he went for it right away?
No, I think in the beginning his plan was to make a
statement. Go for it right away?
Make a statement with me. But I think as the rounds got on, he kind of second thought
that. Slow down and say, you know what, let's see what I'm working with.
Yeah, it's going to go past, you know, the first two rounds, and then, you know, we're going to take it in. Well, so plan B.
You know, with a fighter like you with a lot of experience, you know, and you being a southpaw, and I've seen you work in the gym, and I've seen you fight, I see you have a lot of talent. You're very dangerous. And they know that going in, but they said, yeah, but we're going to talk, and maybe we'll get to his head and make you think that they're going to beat you easily.
Well, I also believe the distance that I was giving him in the beginning of the round, too, was a big factor because he couldn't find an opening.
No,
and it was the first time he fought a southpaw fighter, so which was giving him a lot of problems.
It's important to, we've seen it with Floyd when he first fought Zab. It was the first guy that he ever fought who was a southpaw on that level. And sometimes it takes, I mean, even a Floyd Mayweather takes a little extra getting used to,
Yeah, well, I know, even Floyd, I'm talking about Floyd when he fought Conor McGregor. Conor McGregor was a southpaw, but he was from all different angles, and it was kind of confusing until you figure him out. Say, okay, I'm going to figure him out. I'm going to let him be a little tired, and I'm going to go after him.
You think he took some time to figure him out, or you think he was just playing with his food?
No, I don't think it took some time to figure him out, because he knew that McGregor can punch.
He does have that knockout punch.
I had McGregor for 5 weeks on the rules on boxing. Me watching in the ring with him when
you were there when he fought Paulie.
He was training with Paulie Malignaggi. Yeah. And I saw the punches that he was hitting him with. Whoa, this guy can punch. You know, I said, if he nailed Mayweather with one of these punches, the punches that hurt you sometimes are the ones you don't see coming.
You know, of course.
And so if I'm over here and all of a sudden the punch comes out of nowhere, boom, this way, when it should have come with this one, you don't see the punches coming.
Unconventional.
So you get a little confused, and that's where there could be some danger. But
a fighter with an awkward style is more dangerous than a fighter who's
textbook?
Been in the ring with
textbook fundamentals.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Well, that's what happened when I used to referee Prince Nassim Ahmed.
He was everywhere, man.
He was so awkward. He was all over the place. I mean, I used to use my ring mechanics to move around sometimes. Sometimes I don't know whether to go to my right, to my left. He was all over the place.
You don't want to clash with
him. Yeah, I don't want to clash with him. But then I said, you know what? I'm going to keep a distance and watch him at a distance. But then when he fought Marc Antonio Barrera, of which I referenced, Marc Antonio Barrera took him to school.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
He took him to school,
And Prince Nassim had been out of the ring for about, he thought he was retired. Speaking of retired, I have a question for you. Marcos Maidana was famously happily retired. You see pictures of him on Instagram, on the fat, on the beach. And he's coming back. He just signed a deal to come back with a 2-fight deal. Now, he's one of those famous happy stories in boxing, right? You don't get a lot of happy stories.
Right.
We all said, look, he took those two Mayweather paydays. Mm-hmm. He showed the world what he had. He put Broner down, and he got out, got some money, and he got out. Now he's happy. Now he's going back in, but he's doing it. I think he's making $1.5 million in the first fight and $3 million in the second fight. Are we happy for Marcos Maidana, or are we sad that he's back?
You know, I'm happy for him because he probably got a lot of bills to pay. And he said, you know, maybe have a couple of fights to make it meet. Then I can maybe get.
He might get a Broner rematch, which would be fun.
I'd watch it again. Broner lost the last one.
Exactly.
You never know, but it'd be interesting because he has a name, he has a following, but he probably needs a little extra cash to make things happen at the end of his career, you know?
I would like to see him get back into boxing, but not into the boxing ring. we have a platform in boxing. We build up a fan base, and that's what I plan on doing. Getting back into the boxing scene, staying relevant, staying in the eyes of the fans. And as a commentator, I think that would be the great thing. So next time you guys might see me, you might see Tu Fuego in a suit. So
this is what I'm talking about. Fighters like him, he's thinking ahead. I like to see more fighters think like that way. You know, they're thinking of their future. They're not only just thinking about, I want to keep going. He's thinking about, you know what? I'm going to go to plan B. I didn't make it where I wanted to, but all these years, he knows he's at the tail end. You said it yourself.
Oh, yes, sir.
You're told the tail end of your career, but he's looking at the next step. What's next in line? What does he do best? Boxing. Does he know boxing? Hell yeah. He knows boxing.
He does.
He knows it inside out better than anybody out there. But why not? You know? Yeah. I think it would be a great opportunity.
And since you guys both know boxing, and you do, we have an International Boxing Hall of Famer, former pro and former referee, obviously, and a current pro. We have a fight this weekend between Leo Santa Cruz and Rafael Rivera. I want to do prediction time. What round do you think Leo Santa Cruz will finish Rafael Rivera in?
If you ask me, I think I give it the first five rounds.
I say between two rounds.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I never heard Rafael Rivera.
No, I had to look him up on BoxRec. He doesn't even have a Wikipedia page. So he's 26-2-2. Mexican fighter. I mean, good for him. He's getting the Santa Cruz payday. But we all love Luis Santa Cruz. But
you know,
but
26-2-2 is not a bad
it's
record.
It's not horrible. No, there's worse records.
I mean, you never know what can happen. You get some of these guys out of nowhere, unheard of.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you know.
Look what happened with your brother.
Yeah.
Look what happened with your brother when he lost his belt to Isaac Dogbe. You never heard of Isaac Dogbe.
No.
Next thing you know, it happens sometimes.
But you know, you don't hear Isaac Dolberg anymore.
No, you don't hear about him anymore.
but boxing is fun. I mean, you hear today.
Boxing is full of surprises. Yeah. I think that's what everybody loves about it.
You hear today, you're gone tomorrow.
Yeah.
I mean, there was the fighters that were Chocolatito Gonzalez.
Yes.
He was rated number one pound for pound in the world. As the number one fighter in the world, 6 months later, he's not even in the top 10.
No.
He got knocked out twice by the Riverside.
Yes. Just like he saw Riverside.
Riverside. So, you know, here we are, boxing like that, full of surprises. But then sometimes you find a guy like Manny Pacquiao.
Stays on top of the mountain for that long.
I said, man, and he's still champion today. Yeah,
still doing it.
And you know what? In that fight with him and Marquez, everyone thought he died. And he came back and resurrected.
No, bro. I mean, look, it had an effect on his career for the next couple of fights. But now look at him. I mean, it's just insane how you can bounce back from something like that.
I mean, when he took Adrian Broner the other day and it took Broner to school. I mean,
all the way to school. Broner was afraid to throw punches.
I knew. Well, he wasn't throwing punches when I was sparring with him.
So inactive.
You know what I mean? He's very confident with just a pull back and a counter punch.
That's what he does.
Like, I told him personally, you are not going to beat a Manny Pacquiao no matter how old he
is. Throwing less than 10 punches around.
Yeah, then 10 punches around.
No, you got to throw. I would say you got to throw 3, 4, 5 punches. I was watching a fight the other day. With Jeff Left Hook Lacy,
yes sir,
against
Calzaghe,
Joe Calzaghe.
That's a classic.
And I watched that fight again because I refereed Calzaghe twice. First, when he won his first world championship fight, then I refereed him against Bernard Hopkins, and I remember he always throw so many 3, 4, 5 punches. Bam, bam, bam,
big combination.
Bam. And he's not a husky built, well built, but he got a lot of smart, a lot of speed, and great conditioning, and that's what carried him through with Jeff Left Hook Lacy. Man, he hit him with so many punches. I mean, he was just in his pocket. He's in the pocket. Then he boxed it from the outside.
Sometimes just volume, right? Yeah. We saw that with Manny for how many years? Some guys, he just out-punched him.
Mm-hmm. And that's what Manny Pacquiao does well.
Yes.
It's a sound point, but
at 40, he's still throwing volume.
From all angles. He's hitting all kinds of punches from all angles. And people are saying, like, wow, man, this guy can really... Where did he get the speed? He still has the speed. He has the conditioning. And one of the things that I asked him before the fight at the weigh-in the day before, I said, Manny, Adrian Broner is saying that you're 40 years old, that you have nothing left, and that he's going to knock you out. And you say you're going to knock him out. You're going to be the first fighter to ever knock out Adrian Broner. Yeah. I said, what do you have to say about that? Manny told me, Joe, I'm not thinking anything. I just know that I'm going to win this fight. I'm going to have everything ready for tomorrow night. I'm going to have the conditioning. And he did. He had it all. He didn't knock him out. He got close to knocking him out in the seventh to eighth round. But Manny Pacquiao still showed that the conditioning is so important.
It is.
Because you can have all the smarts in the world. You can be the best puncher. Mm-hmm. But if you have no condition, you're over. You can't make it.
Nope. Speaking of Manny Pacquiao, we heard a lot. There was much ado about a possible rematch with him and Floyd Mayweather before this last fight. That they were setting it up for it. Freddie Roach talked about it. Manny talked about it. I wrote a column on it. This is something that there was a lot of talk about it. And we haven't heard anything since. Mm-hmm. And since then, they've been floating Keith Thurman's name. Yeah. They've been floating some other people's name. One, do you think it's still on the table? And you think it's just kind of underwater? We haven't seen it right now. And two, if not Floyd Mayweather, who do you want to see Manny Pacquiao fight next? Both of you.
Well, I do believe that that's a fight that, of course, it's one of the biggest fights.
It's the biggest fight of all time.
Anticipated. There was controversy with that fight alone because of Manny Pacquiao's shoulder injury. I believe with the way social media is, that fight would sell again.
Oh, yeah.
It would definitely sell.
It was the biggest fight ever, $600 million.
You're bringing back Floyd Mayweather. Yes. They're bringing back a Floyd Mayweather, and then you see the current, Manny Pacquiao.
But what
Pacquiao
if it's not Mayweather? Who in the welterweight division do you want to see Manny fight next?
I would like to see him fight Errol Spence.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to see that. Okay. I like Manny too much.
Okay, my opinion is this. I'd like to see Manny Pacquiao definitely fight Floyd Mayweather.
Oh, yeah.
The rematch will definitely sell big. I'm sure they'll probably get a couple of million pay-per-views on that. And it's good because it'll settle everything once and for all. Even though they're much older, they've been what, like four years, mm-hmm. right?
And they were old then.
Yeah.
And a lot of people say they were old back then. They still got a little spark of the old flash.
I hope so.
But these guys, they still bring a lot to boxing. I mean, the names alone are just
They're the biggest names of their era. No question.
Mayweather, his last two fights, he fought two MMA guys. And I don't know if that's going to help.
He made $10 million and $256 million.
I think Mayweather should take a tune up fight before he fights Pacquiao.
Yeah?
Yeah, because he fought twice in the last two fights in the last 2 years. But two guys are not.
He says he's got $80 million worth of exhibition offers on the table. That's what he said this week. If you were him, would you fight Manny Pacquiao one more time? A dangerous fight, dangerous to your record, dangerous to your life, dangerous to everything for $250 million when you don't need it? Or would you fight exhibitions for the rest of your life for $80 to $100 million?
Well, it depends. It depends how I feel physically.
Yeah.
I would say, you know, man.
I know, I'm not him. Exactly.
I may go for the exhibitions if I don't need the money, but $250 million is a lot of money, too.
I know, man. It's so much
and
money.
I may take that shot and say, you know what? I will settle the score once.
I've asked Joe this before. Uh-huh. What percentage do you think it'll take Floyd to come back out? Because he won't do it for 50-50, of course.
No.
But what do you think? What percentage do you think they have to offer him for him to come back for the Pacquiao fight again?
It's got to be maybe a 60-40 for him. Yeah, he's definitely has to get the bigger bargain.
The lion's share,
for sure. Yes.
I spoke to Freddie Roach about that, his trainer, about the rematch after the fight when he fought Adrian Broner the other night. I said, Freddie Roach, now there's talk about maybe you Pacquiao fighting on Mayweather. What do you think? The percentage. You think it'll be 50-50? And he said, well, no. He says that they are the money team and they're the ones. So it won't be 50-50.
Uh-huh.
But he's not in the position to be talking about
it. No, he's not that guy.
But I spoke to Leonard Ellerby about it as well. He said, Joe, there's a lot of welterweights after the fight. He said, there's a lot of welterweights out there that we can fight. Uh-huh. We don't have to necessarily fight Pacquiao. I mean, it's already...
You know how they are. Yeah. It's a business. They've seen each other at two basketball games. They saw each other in Japan.
It's like if you go see a house, oh, I love that house. No, don't show you. We got to play that poker
play.
You go look at a house, and you know you like it, the broken. Uh-huh. You know,
Mayweather's going to make them come in.
You got to kind of, you know, it's okay, you know, but inside of you, this is what you want.
Yes.
But you can't show it.
You can't show your
cards. You want to get the best part. You want to have the edge. Hey, fans. I'm going to tell you that this has been a great show today. Diego Magdaleno on the show with us. John Zimmel, Joe Cortez here. Remember, guys, keep your guards up at all times. Protect yourself at all times. And remember, I'm fair but I'm firm.
Fair but firm with the Hall of Fame boxing referee. I'm Joe Cortez for all of Las Vegas. Come on, guys. Let's touch them up. Clean fight. I'm Joe Cortez. Fair but firm.